Falling leaves and falling temperatures mean it's time to put the garden to bed. But before you tuck everything in for a long winter's nap, why not join me, Skip Mancini, for an autumn edition of Growing on the High Plains. This being the week of Thanksgiving, I thought I'd give some thanks for a garden gift that often peters out early in the season. But this year just kept on giving until well after frost appeared on the pumpkin. When I first started gardening on the High Plains 40-something years ago, my tomato patch was the envy of all who surveyed it. My relatives from Oaky Land were especially amazed with the size, number, and taste of the perfect fruits. My Aunt Mickey always loaded the back seat of her car with boxes and baskets and buckets of tomatoes to transport back to her sandy soil that was perfect for growing peanuts, but left her lacking when it came to a sizable tomato harvest. Each spring, I would transplant the leafy starts into the soil that had previously been home to alfalfa, wheat, or centuries of virgin prairie grass. I'd encase the tomato plants with a stub of plastic irrigation pipe, fill it with water once a week, and let it leach down to the spreading roots of Better Boys, Romas, or Early Girls. For several years, that was about all it took to produce bumper crops. But then the vines began to yellow, dry up, and die, often before fruit had been set. My tomato harvests got skimpier, and the fruits got smaller. I looked for bugs, both above and below ground. Suggestions of foliage fungus or soil-borne diseases sent me to the little-used chemical pantry to fill the duster with sabadilla powder or to look for a potion that might be safe to use as a soil drench. Finding no magic mixture, I took over new territory for a tomato bed far from the sickly soil of the old garden. This produced a modest improvement the first year, but then the tomato plague seemed to invade the new area. I finally decided that I'd continue to rotate my tomato planting areas, increase the number of plants, buy ones that had the highest resistance ratings to wilts and rusts, and then learn to live with less tomatoes. This routine became standard, and though we wound up with plenty of tomatoes, I missed those early carefree days of bountiful harvests. This year I planted an abundance of plants, expecting to lose at least half to the annual tomato die-off. And the early summer promised to be another one of heat, wind, drought, and disease. But around the middle of June, I noticed that the leafy vines were growing and entwining and setting on lots of blooms. By July, I had lost only one plant, and the tomato patch was a mass of green. I began picking ripe cherry tomatoes first, and by August I was canning, saucing, freezing, and giving away big round red orbs to anyone who would take them. This kept up through September and most of October, until I finally pulled the still-producing vines and loaded them up for a final delivery to the animals at the zoo in Garden City. But my kitchen was still filled with tomatoes, as I kept some of the big green ones, wrapped them in newspaper to ripen slowly, and as I write this, I'm hopeful I'll have homegrown tomatoes for Thanksgiving dinner. I don't know what caused the turnaround, but I think it had something to do with some glorious rains and temperature changes during the last half of the summer. I also don't know if next year will be as bountiful. Gardening is always a gamble. But for this year at least, the garden gods smiled, and I hit the jackpot with one of my favorite fruits.
Growing on the High Plains is a production of High Plains Public Radio. It's written and produced by Skip Mancini.